on the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Found my way in back into the studio. How about this? We're live again here on WTMJ, first time in 2026. How about it? Welcome in, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio. You know, we've done a lot of taped stuff the last month or so because the Bucks have been playing on Thursdays, or the holidays have fallen on Thursdays. But I hope you enjoyed some of the stuff that was in the podcast feed and on the YouTube channel over the last couple of weeks over the holiday break. If you haven't checked that out, both are very, very good audio only. In fact, the Games of the Year is audio only this year. But then we've got the Brewers Jeopardy game that I had DJ Pyhowski of No Laying Up, Gabe Neitzel of our friends at ESPN Milwaukee, and Derek Van Riper of The Athletic all join us for a little remembering of 2025. And, of course, those top 10 games of the year, about two-hour pod with highlights and recaps and things you forgot and all the details you could ever want from the best games of the regular season. But that's the past. This is the future. We've got a lot to talk about from the Brewers' perspective, and really none of it has to do with anything on the field. Today we're going to kick things off with arbitration talk, as it's never fun to talk about arbitration because it looks like the Brewers are in a disagreement with one player, and people have overreactions to it. So we'll break down what arbitration actually is. And we do this every year for the people who aren't familiar with it, for the people who are familiar. Just bear with me. It's going to be something that's very topical over the next 12 to 14 months because, well, arbitration is going to be one of the things, you know, reassessing it is going to be on the table for the CBA in 2027. At the end of this season with the pending stoppage, lockout, whatever you want to say. So we're going to talk about arbitration. We're going to talk about what that means for the Brewers. We're also going to talk about the new coaching staff, of course. Daniel Vogelbach, how about that? You know, swinging a drive, Vogie, the grand slam. It was actually really cool. I was listening on the archives. I'm trying to see if I can have it in here. The Euchre had the call of the walk-off grand slam back in 2021 against the Cardinals, September 5th, you may recall. It was just cool to hear Uke again as we're approaching that anniversary next week as well of Uke's passing. So those are things on the top of the mind. Also, we're going to talk a little bit of Zips, the projections, and then also TV news seems to break every other day right now, and talk about FanDuel coming up in another segment or two. So actually a lot of newsy stuff in today's episode, not a lot of trades or baseball reaction right now, since we've talked plenty about Angel Zerpa and Nick Mears, Isaac Collins, that deal, because the Brewers haven't done anything else since. So we'll take a quick breather here at the top of the show, come back, break down arbitration. Who's the guy going to maybe hearing, maybe not? We'll explain why on the other side of the break. If you want to join us, 855-616-1620 is the phone number. 855-616-1620, the Outdoor Living Unlimited WTMJ News Time, 810. It's our Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line as well. See, it's been so long I've been in the studio, I can't read the right advertisements. But anyway, we're back. It's 2026, and let's talk money, money, money. Coming up next on 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Hello? I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was.
I think I said this every time we use this as a rejoin. Isaac Marquardt, our producer. This was my walk-up song in high school. All 5'8" of me. Perfect song. For a short little center fielder catcher. I was Dalton Varsho. I was Dalton Varsho before it was cool to be Dalton Varsho. He also was a lot better at baseball than me. Welcome back, Brewers Weekly. I'm Dom Catronio. Okay, money. We were almost in this exact same situation exactly a year ago, talking about money in arbitration and how the Brewers did not come to an agreement with William Contreras before today's arbitrary, I'm using air quotes here, arbitrary deadline. So there's a couple of things that go into arbitration. If you're not familiar with how this works, let's say I get signed to the Brewers. Hey, congrats, Dom. You're making your big league debut. Boom. That starts my service time clock. And let's say I'm lucky enough to make the opening day roster, so we'll deal with even numbers here. And I spend the whole season on the active roster up in the big leagues. Or maybe I get hurt, but I stay in the big league, you know, injured list, whatever it is. I earn a year of service time, a.k.a. 172 days on the active roster. You've heard that number thrown around before. The minimum number of days now. The season is 186 days long, so you essentially need to spend all but 2 weeks at most that down in AAA, and you can earn a full year. We've talked about service time manipulation, but that's not this conversation. We're talking about how you get to arbitration. All right, so now I've got 1 year of service time under my belt. Let's say I was rookie of the year, and I had an incredible season. I'm like, hey, Brewers, can I get a raise? I'm like, no, man. You're getting league minimum. That's how it works. That's how it works. I don't have a say in my salary for any team, not just the Brewers, until I get to 3 years of service time. The team controls me for 6 years of service time. So that means after year one, year two, and year three, I have no say in my salary. Now, after year three, heading into my fourth, fifth, and sixth seasons, I finally have a say in what I can make. Now, it's not necessarily that cut and dry, but that's the simplest way I can explain it. There's Super Twos. That's applicable to Bryce Terang. That means you earn enough days in service time that you didn't exactly get to that third year of arbitration or third year of eligibility, but you have enough days to say, you know what, we're close enough. You deserve to be access to arbitration. So that's the case for Bryce Terang. Or then there's cases where it's like, you know, Andrew Vaughn, where he spent enough days in the minor leagues this year that it's impossible for him to accrue to a full year to be a free agent. Meaning, if he had spent the full year on the big league roster this season, he would be entering his final year of team control. Instead, he's got 2 years of team control. So it's complicated. But the other big thing to remember about arbitration, as you enter arbitration after 3 years, is that you're guaranteed a raise. That you are guaranteed a raise unless there are extenuating circumstances. And they are really extenuating. I mean, there's a whole bunch of crazy stuff that goes into it. I mean, for instance, when you look at it, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of years ago, I recommend a book called Lords of the Realm. I know I've mentioned this before. It's a dense book. It is very, very detailed of the history of baseball labor. But think about how it used to go. Ty Cobb literally won the Triple Crown and his pay went down the following season. This is how far back it goes of like players fighting for their own contracts. It used to be owners saying willy-nilly, I'm going to pay you this and you're going to like it. Joe DiMaggio had holdouts over those years with the Yankees about trying to be the highest paid player and, oh my God, you want to make more money than the Babe? How dare you? Or then you've got Andy Messersmith, Dave McNally. You've got the holdouts by Sandy Koufax. I mean, Don Drysdale. The list goes on of baseball labor and arbitration and holdouts and things of this nature. This isn't just a football thing. All of this is to say, as you are lighting your torches and sharpening your pitchforks, oh my God, why can't they pay William? We were in this exact same situation last year. And the reason I put air quotes on that arbitrary deadline today, teams can still negotiate all the way up until the quote-unquote hearing, because that's the final step of arbitration that nobody wants to talk about. So I'm now through 3 years of service time. Okay, I'm eligible for arbitration. Hey, Brewers, I think I'm worth $5 million next season based on X, Y, and Z. And the Brewers, and any team for this matter, I'm just using the Brewers as an example. And the Brewers turn around and say, you know, Dom, I think X, Y, and Z is good, but here's A, B, and C of why we think we're going to pay you $4.5 million. Now, what will generally happen from there is my representation and the Brewers would sit down and say, hey, you said 4.5, I said 5, let's meet in the middle, 4.75. Good, shake hands, and everybody moves on and goes on their merry way. Sometimes the gap is big. Sometimes the gap's like, hey, I think I'm worth $8 million. And the Brewers come back like, oh, we had you at 5.5. And that's not where it's something where meeting in the middle may make sense. So the reason I, again, say arbitration is arbitrary, and it's not a real deadline today. You're supposed to exchange figures, and those are allegedly locked in. They're not really locked in. Some teams are a file, file and trial no matter what. I will say, under Matt Arnold, there's not been a trial yet. Just keep that in mind. Under the David Stearns administration, yes, of course, you have the crazy cases with Josh Hader and how all they care about is saves. I'm not doing multiple innings. The Corbin Burns discussion, all that stuff. That was all under Stearns. We have not seen an arbitration trial under Matt Arnold. I think that's something worth remembering. Now, in the case of William Contreras, you may recall the odd deal from last year where he was given a 2-year contract with a buyout, but he was arbitration eligible. What did that actually mean? So this was his second year of arbitration. He's got one more full season of control after this season, 2027. But he was given a $12 million club option, which means, hey, you made $6 million in 2024, or excuse me, in 2025. He made $6 million this season. If you crush it and you, you know, have another MVP caliber season like he did in 2024, you're going to get $12 million. You're going to be the highest paid catcher in the arbitration pool. And, you know, people talk about, oh my God, that's so cheap. Why would they do this? Why would they buy it? I'm like, he had to sign it too. Okay. Like, he could have said, let's go to arbitration. I don't want to sign that. So he got a $100,000 buyout because the club declined that club option. So now you're in this projection where projecting arbitration isn't perfect. You know, MLB Trade Rumors has done a solid job over the years. Matt Swartz is his name who does it. $11.1 million is a projection. Now, you may be thinking, and I know I've seen this on social media, we're really haggling over $900,000, which is really $800,000 when you factor into the buyout. Yeah. Yeah, we are. And I am sick of the, well, it's just $800,000. Just pay it. It's not your money. It's a collective group of money. And I remind folks about ownership and about, you know, the way that contracts go up and salaries, and we'll talk about this with the coaching staff too, where we're in an arms race, not only on the field, but off the field when it comes to salaries, titles, pay raises, that sort of thing. You know, if you work a regular 9-to-5 job and you're hoping for that, you know, 4% raise at the end of the year, you're like, all right, cool, I'm hoping I get this, and you earn it, good job. That stuff happens in the big leagues too for everyone that you haven't heard of, for everyone who you aren't wearing a jersey of. Everyone from the analyst to the trainer to, I mean, they deserve bonuses too. It's not your money. So I understand the frustration and the optics and the PR of they're haggling over $800,000. It's never that simple. And I think furthermore, a reminder, Williams signed that deal, this two-year deal, after the deadline and before they actually went to a hearing. So I'm not shutting the door on this for William Contreras. I'm sure cooler heads will prevail. The reason why we put this arbitrary deadline on is to tell the agents to get on with it and let's have a number set before we arrive to spring training. That's the whole point of it, so that you can get process moving. Deadlines create action. And that's why you saw everybody else sign today other than William Contreras. So if there's breaking news during this program, if we find out what the actual filing numbers are, as here it is from Mark Feinsand, just came across the wire here. William filed at $9.9 million. The Brewers filed at $8.55 million. Again, that's from Mark Feinsand of MLB.com. So quick, you know, back of the napkin math right there. That's $1.35 million. That is not a small amount of money. And maybe they eventually meet in the middle before the hearing doors open. But the last part of that hearing, and I haven't talked about this yet, what that hearing is in arbitration, it sucks. It flat out sucks. Nobody wants to be involved with it. Whether it's the team, whether it's the player, the agency, the ownership, nobody likes it. That's why everybody tries to settle before the doors open. Because once those doors open and, you know, court is in session, there's an independent arbiter right there listening to the case from both teams. And there, you're sitting in there listening to all the things that the team doesn't like about you and why you don't deserve the $1.35 million difference here between William and the team. But then you have to turn around and try to, you know, boost yourself up and say, no, here's why I'm worth this and all that, and like stay composed, stay, don't get flustered. All that. It's hard, man. It is really, really hard. Let's hope it doesn't get to that point. We'll react to that point when we get there, but I think there's no reason to overreact right now because this isn't a Tarek Skubal Detroit Tigers situation, if you haven't seen that number. Before we take a break, Tarek Skubal filed at $32 million. He's entering the final year of arbitration for him. He's going to be a free agent after next season. The Tigers countered at $19 million. $13 million difference between the two. Now, if Skubal gets his number, he's the highest paid player ever in arbitration, surpassing Juan Soto's $31 million as a Yankee 2 years ago. And quite frankly, back-to-back Cy Young Award winner, best pitcher in the game right now. I don't want to read some of his stats into the record and try to tell the Tigers that they're going to win. So, again, it's hard. It's really hard to talk about arbitration from the perspective of, oh my gosh, you're just sticking up for the owner. He doesn't deserve it. He's got enough money. It's not that simple. It's really not that simple. If it was that simple, they wouldn't be going to a hearing. And I don't know if they even are yet. There's still time to settle this out of court. And I'm also surprised that, you know, William did file under $10 million. He had a rough year, we know, playing through injury and that sort of thing. He's got really good agents, I would imagine, understanding what the market is going to look like for him. So we will update that story as it comes. But let's talk about the other guys that signed arbitration, what this means for the Brewers and their coaches. That's coming up on the other side of the break here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. So let's talk about the guys that did sign their arbitration deals, and then we'll get into the coaching staff. Of the other six players that needed to sign, everybody did. We'll start with the youngest guys in their first year of arbitration. Garrett Mitchell, yeah. His first year, he's got 3 years of service time. He signed for $950,000. Just under a mil. I think it's pretty expected. League minimum is just shy of $800,000, so this makes sense. Angel Zerfa, newly acquired in his first year of arbitration, 1.095, so just shy of 1.1. Bryce Terang is a Super 2, so he technically is just over 2 years of service time, 2 years and 165 days of service time. He is given an extra year of arbitration eligibility, so he will get 4 years of arbitration starting this year, and he gets $4.15 million. I mean, going from league minimum to this, congratulations to Bryce, life-changing money. Congratulations to him. He deserves it, and I have said it since April. That's the guy you need to extend right now. It's second basemen are not that expensive on the open market, but yet Andrés Giménez signed a deal, and every year that Bryce continues to improve his offense and get better and better, that yesterday's price isn't today's price. So that would be my priority moving forward. The arbitration two guys are Trevor McGill. He signs, 4.7 mil for him. He is entering one more year of team control after this one. We all know what that means for a closer in the Brewers uniform. And then Andrew Vaughn, $7.65 million for him. And a reminder, this year and next year of team control, 2026 and 2027, because of the time he spent in the minor league. So the Brewers have control of Vaughn for two seasons if they so wish. And then the final man, he was signed back in November, Jake Bowers. They went ahead and just made a deal for him, $2.7 million for JB. He is back in his final year before free agency, unrestricted free agency, I should say, since he was a minor league deal last year, which is wild to think about. All right, the other deals the Brewers made this week. Coaching staff finalized on the big league staff, and a few familiar names have joined the fold, and some new roles and some new titles for a few guys. On the pitching side of things, title, Jim Henderson, he's now the pitching coordinator. And in Adam McAlvey's story, saying that he's going to be working hand-in-hand more with Pat Murphy on a game-by-game pitching basis. Hookie's still in charge of the pitching staff. Charlie Green is still out in the outfield with the bullpen group. So the Brewers kind of realign and give a new title to Jim Henderson in part. Again, we talk about those raises and everything. Like, well, probably comes with a new cash flow as well for Jim Henderson, and he deserves it, as the Brewers had such a great pitching staff and great bullpen last season. Another pitching name to note, Juan Sandoval has been added as an assistant pitching coach. There is so much that goes into this, I think people forget, of the meetings and the scouting and everything that goes into it. So Juan Sandoval will help with that, as well as the bullpen catchers, Christian Correa, Ty Duvall. Congratulations to them staying on the big league staff. On the base paths, a new change. Since, remember, Ricky Weeks is no longer in the dugout, he is going into the front office. Jason Lane is now the offense and strategy coordinator, kind of a fancy way to say bench coach. But you've also still got Nestor Corridor as the field coordinator. He was originally just assistant coach. Now you give him a new title as well. So those are your two kind of your quote-unquote bench coaches. No more associate manager like Ricky Weeks had, but now he's going into the front office. Also onto the staff with the hitting staff is the fact that the Brewers lose Connor Dawson to Kansas City. They promote Eric Tyson to lead hitting coach and bring in Guillermo Martinez, who was with the Cubs minor leagues last year, long time with the Blue Jays before that, and Daniel Vogelbach, yep, in his second year of coaching, Vogie is now with the Brewers, and he's going to be an assistant hitting coach. Now, I'll get to the rest of the coaches here in a second. When we talk about coaches, and maybe my least favorite discourse, even lower than arbitration conversation, yeah, is the, oh, this hitting coach is the reason why the Brewers aren't... Stop it. This hitting coach didn't do anything. Stop it. Daniel Vogelbach had a 30%... Stop it. Come on. First of all, none of you were saying that last year. None of you. And with the three hitting coaches and Al LaBeouf, who's now being reassigned within the organization, probably going down to the more of the farm side of things. Also for his health, I'm hoping for Buffy and Eddie to reach out to him. But next, the other thing too, the players take responsibility on this too. It's funny because when the Brewers are, you know, one of the best offenses in baseball, top five in runs, top five in offense, you know, in weighted runs created plus, all this stuff, like, oh, it's the players who did it. But when the Brewers are struggling for the first month of the season, I'll fire the hitting coach. You never get credit. So forget me with all of the hitting coach. Oh, he's not going to – he didn't hit. He can't be a hitting coach. Yes, he can. Daniel Vogelbach, I think, is a really good fit. He drew walks. He knew how to work a pitch count, knew how to provide off the bench as a pinch hitter. He's a familiar face. He knows the tech. He knows the team. Give it a chance, man. I'm excited to talk to Vogie in spring training. Now, on the base paths – couple of changes here. Julio Barbón is being reassigned to the minor leagues as well, as he'll be in a player development role. So Jason Lane is no longer at third base either, with him going into the bench. So Matt Erickson, the infield coach for the Brewers, longtime manager up in Appleton with the Timber Rattlers, is now coaching third. He's done that plenty in the minor leagues. And then over at first base is former Northwestern head coach Spencer Allen, who's been on the staff the last couple of years in the minor leagues as a field coordinator, is now going to be the first base coach. Now, Spencer was around the team the last couple of weeks of the regular season. It's good to see him, and plenty of baseball experience for him. Midwest guy. He was on that coaching staff for Illinois when they won like a million games in a row in 2015. Went to Northwestern, and now he's in the Pro Bowl. So that is your coaching staff. The Brewers made a few changes for the back-to-back manager of the year, Pat Murphy. Let's talk a little bit television now, shall we? TV is weird, and this is why radio, we're always here for you. You don't got to worry about us. But what does today's news about FanDuel Sports Network and Main Street Sports Group mean for the Brewers? No, don't go canceling your cable package just yet. We'll explain on the other side of the break on 620 WTMJ. Because if there's more to life than baseball, I don't... Welcome back. I'm Dom Cotroneo. We're going to the top of the hour here on 620 WTMJ. When we talk about how to watch the Brewers on television, it's been quite the few years since Fox Sports folded and, you know, the pandemic and everything. So to backtrack, 2019 was the last year the Brewers used Fox Sports, and that folded as a whole entity and sold itself to Diamond Sports Group, a.k.a. Bally Sports. And the day, it's kind of wild to think about now, but the day that Bally Sports officially began operations was March 15th, 2020. Think about that date for a second. March 15th, 2020. COVID shutdown started on March 13th. So, sports were canceled, COVID, everything. Like, worst timing possible. They hemorrhaged money in 2020. Nobody traveled. Heck, a lot of teams didn't even travel in 2021 either because they were hemorrhaging so much money. So then, bankruptcy starts to emerge. And Diamond Sports Group is out of money. We can't pay the teams the rights fees because a reminder of how this business transaction works. Hi, Diamond Sports Group. I hear you would like to broadcast our games. Yes, we would. Well, you have to pay us, you know, $20 million for the rights to broadcast our games. Done. The reason why they would do that is because then Diamond Sports Group turned around and said, all right, we paid $20 million. We're $20 million in the hole. We're going to turn around and sell at least $25 million of advertisements because we're the exclusive home of the Milwaukee Brewers. That's how the business works in its simplest form. That doesn't include paying for crew, doesn't include paying for equipment, talent, that sort of thing. But the point being is that's how it works. But in 2023, it was very clear, Diamond's out of money, Bally's going to fold, what are we going to do? FanDuel Sportsnet. FanDuel. Wow, different name, other gambling partner. We know how this works. They're the only ones with money right now in the advertising space. FanDuel comes in and says, we've got a new partner. It's called Main Street Sports Group. bunch of ex-ESPN executives, bunch of very experienced regional sports people. We'll get it right. We're going to get it right. We'll buy it for pennies off the dollar off Sinclair / Diamond Sports Group and bring regional sports to these teams. And some teams signed on. Some teams decided to go to the MLB model. The MLB model is not streaming only. It still will be available on cable if the Brewers do go in that fashion. But then it brings us to present day. Today, all 9 contracts were terminated that were owed to Main Street Sports Group. Now, Main Street Sports Group, a.k.a. FanDuel Sports. Main Street is the, you know, the overhead business entity that is actually signing the checks for all of these networks. The reason that all these teams had their contracts terminated at the same time is because at a certain point, we see so little movement in free agency and in trades. It's because these teams don't know how much money they're going to get in from their TV partner, right? We just talked about how this business transaction works. Hello there, you know, FanDuel Sportsnet. You want to pay us $30 million to broadcast our games? Okay, thank you for the $30 million. Okay, cool. I've got $30 million to spend. I'm going to go get so-and-so, right? That's how it, in simplest terms, there's a lot more that goes into it, works. So the reason why they all leave right now is because now they can open up a negotiation period where they've already missed payments on the Marlins. They've already missed payments on the Cardinals. The Brewers one was due at the end of the month. So what this allows Main Street Sports Group to do is say, hey, insert team here, we're going to cut our number to you. Take it or leave it. And then that team has to go, we're going to leave it. We're going to go to MLB. And then suddenly that number can maybe get divested into other teams. So let's say St. Louis, it sounds like they're going to leave the FanDuel model and go to MLB. That rights deal is going to be interesting because that's a lot of money sitting there that allegedly Main Street could offer to a team. Let's say of the 9 teams, let's say only, you know, 3 of them return. Does that mean those 3 teams are going to get a raise from what they got the year prior because now Main Street is saying, please, pick us, stay with us? That could feasibly happen. But then the other thing that could happen is saying, you know what? The writing's on the wall. Rob Manfred wants us all to be on this MLB model in the next 2 years when the media rights deal is up again in 2028. So let's just go ahead and get started on the MLB model and keep all the sales in-house. We get to keep the profit of the advertising. Sure, we don't get a lump sum for the rights to television, but we'll be getting a little bit from the central fund from MLB. It won't be what it used to be, but the benefit of being a Brewer is how we close the segment. Mark Adonasio has told us in on-the-record sessions with the owner, yes, it's a blessing and a curse. The curse fact is the Brewers don't make a lot of money from their television partner. That's a fact. It's in the bottom half of the league, really bottom 5 of the league from what we know. We don't know the firm number. This stuff is very close to the vest. But on the blessing side of that is that, well, we don't really anticipate using that money anyway. So we know how to operate financially without them, so we'll be fine. So that's where the Brewers come in. How will you watch the Brewers in 2026? In the event the Brewers go to MLB, there will still be a channel on cable. In the event the Brewers stick with FanDuel, status quo. In the event the Brewers are on MLB and you live in a traditionally blacked out area, you won't be blacked out. That's how I understand it. Because of the fact that they're not on a cable provider, so there's nobody blacking you out. That's the whole point. We will wait and see what happens, but that's going to be a negotiation to be had in the next month or so because FanDuel broadcasts Brewer spring training games. Needs to be figured out. Let's talk a little projections coming up on the other side of the break. The Brewers, they got some good ones in here from our friends at FanGraphs. Stay with us, 620 WTMJ. Hey, the man, Shirley. Over on YouTube. Little comment there. Charles Miller. Reminder, all these shows are streamed on WTMJ's YouTube page. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio, Brewers Weekly, going for another 13 minutes or so. So this is going to be a shorter segment. Talking FanGraphs. If you don't subscribe to FanGraphs and you're a baseball fan or you play fantasy baseball and you don't subscribe, what are you doing? You need to do that. Change that right now. Go to FanGraphs. Support great independent journalism talking baseball. And if you're a nerd like me, you will really love it, including access to Dan Zimborski's Zips projections. Zips as in Dan Zimborski, you get it. Anyway, the way it works, and we've had Dan on the show years ago just talking about, hey, his model suggests how a player can perform in their 50th percentile performance for the season. Now, he also can project out an 80th percentile and a 20th percentile, meaning here's a great season, here's a poor season, based on everything that his proprietary model puts in. There are some major league teams, the Brewers are not one of them, there are some major league teams that use his model for player projections. Other teams have their own independent model, which is fine. I mean, it's very normal to have a bunch of statisticians create a model and say, we think this player is going to do X, Y, and Z in our uniform. But what does that mean for the Brewers? And I really enjoyed the opening lines here from Zimborski about, you know, why we tend to underrate the Brewers in projections. Over the last 5 or 6 years, the Zips projected standings have tended to underrate the Brewers, but not because of the projections themselves. Instead, this has mostly been because of me. Zips is neither systematically high nor low on the Brewers players, but I tend to be way too conservative when making depth charts for the simulations in the spring. Typically, when Zips puts out a bunch of interesting projections for fringy guys on Milwaukee, I tell myself, sure, but no way the Brewers actually gamble and play those guys. And then, well, they do. So when Zips projected Joey Ortiz to get 2.3 WAR, and they tabbed Isaac Collins and Caleb Durbin to be roughly league average, and liked a whole bunch of random fifth starters like Chad Patrick, I chickened out and knocked him down a peg. So that's straight from Dan. He understood it, and he's not taking them for granted this year. Now, in English, a reminder about when you read these numbers, it's not set in stone. It's a projection. Like, for instance, for the Brewers, it's projecting for Christian Yelich to have 17 homers and 16 stolen bases just after having nearly 30 and 18 stolen bases. But the point being, you know, it takes in the aging curve, it takes in the exit velocity, it takes in the strikeout rate, it takes in so many different numbers that it only sees the numbers. Or it even projects Jackson Chourio to be only another 2020 season, not 30-30, like is always his under, you know, not public, but really sort of public goal of trying to go 30-30. In fact, it doesn't believe in Bryce Turang's power surge, only gives him 13 homers, but still gives him 27 stolen bases. And then even for Joey Ortiz, it projects a 90 OPS plus, which would be an improvement from last season. And again, these are not perfect. It also has pitching side of things here. And the numbers that I instantly wanted to look at for how many innings and what would it look like for Brandon Woodruff and Aaron Ashby. Now, it has Ashby projected as a reliever with some opener starts in there too, but 82 innings. I just really think Aaron Ashby is going to throw triple-digit innings this year now. Again, I still think he should be considered a starter in spring training. We'll see if the Brewers believe that as well. But I think Aaron Ashby is going to get to triple-digit innings. It also gave Brandon Woodruff only 97 innings. I also think Brandon Woodruff is going to get to triple-digit innings, mostly because he wants to prove he's healthy going into unrestricted free agency. Part of the thing about Brandon Woodruff accepting that qualifying offer is now heading into 2027, whenever this season begins in 2027, regardless of what happens to the qualifying offer deal, that's not his problem. He might be one of the first starting pitchers off the board before a potential lockout because he doesn't have the attached draft pick compensation onto him. That was really smart of him for his free agency to take the qualifying offer because you can't get the qualifying offer a second time. So I do think Woodruff's going to get over 100 innings pitched. It only has one qualified pitcher for the Brewers, Freddie Peralta. I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be, for this team to be successful, they need at least two, more likely three, qualified starting pitchers, meaning at least 162 innings pitched. I think Freddie is a good candidate for that. I think Quinn Priester is a good candidate for that. And I will throw Jacob Mizorowski on the low end of that barrel, saying, if you can get more than 150 innings out of Jacob Mizorowski this season all in the big leagues, that's a win. Because, again, he's starting to push himself to levels that he's never gone before as far as workload goes. The other thing, too, strikeout leader for the Brewers in the Zips projection by strikeout rate, no surprise, Trevor McGill, nearly 30%. It really loves the Brewers bullpen, no surprise there, between McGill and Ribe. And it still likes Craig Yoho for strikeouts, for a 25% strikeout rate, but is worried about his walk rate in the double digits as well. That's something we'll monitor into the new year. But I would, again, encourage you, subscribe to FanGraphs, go click around the Zips projections, use it to win your fantasy league, And then we can all sit here and laugh about it in a year's time, like about how wrong it was about the Brewers. But it was pretty right about some of the Brewers last year. It's just that Zimborski didn't put them on the depth chart in the order that maybe was originally suggested to him because he didn't think Caelan Byrne was going to be an everyday player, didn't think that Joey Ortiz was going to amass two WAR, granted most of it on defense. You get my point. Zips is a fascinating endeavor, and I commend Dan Zimborski for doing this for over 20 years now. Kudos, Dan. All right, we'll wrap things up with kind of a serious topic and then give you a little MLB news, talking about what is going on in Venezuela and how this impacts Major League Baseball and the Brewers and the signing day and all this stuff. So that's how we'll wrap up the show next on 620 WTMJ. All right, last couple minutes of the program. Don't have a lot of time to talk about this, but the reason why I didn't leave a lot of time is the truth is, when we talk about Venezuela, this is now a geopolitics section of the podcast. We talk about Venezuela and the capture and arrest of Nicolas Maduro, that how is this going to impact major leaguers in Venezuela trying to come back to the States? You know, the Venezuelan Winter League just restarted. They were in the playoffs. Jackson Churio was playing down there. I didn't see if he was in the box score tonight. The point being, every team has been in touch with their players. Nobody is in danger. And again, with the operation, regardless of how you feel about it, it was a targeted one way in, one way out. One guy got their guy, got out. This isn't war. This isn't, you know, guys are being put to the front lines. There isn't an actual offensive happening right now. That being said, if America is going to be running Venezuela, in the words of President Trump, that maybe that expedites the visa process to make sure these guys can get visas. But we've already seen Venezuela nationals get denied visas when they're trying to come for a Little League baseball tournament. So I imagine Major League Baseball is going to have to step in and help out here and get some more legal support from a higher power, trying to get them, you know, hey, these guys have already been in the country. Let's make sure all these visas and all of these issues that come from this, somebody's in charge of it. Every team is a legal department. Every team is an HR department. They'll figure it out. But it doesn't sound like anybody is in danger. And it seems, according to Matt Arnold, that he's been in touch with everybody in Venezuela. I worry about the WBC, and I hope for Omar Lopez, the manager of Team Venezuela, who was my double-A manager in the minor leagues with the Houston Astros back in 2019, that I just hope that none of this puts a cloud on a really good Venezuelan team, regardless if, you know, players maybe get spooked, maybe they don't want to play, maybe they're not able to leave, different players, whatever the fan support may look like in Miami. But I'm hoping that it doesn't impact baseball at all. That's all we can really hope for. Because I don't think it will. That's how I wanted to end the show. That I saw people's concerns about it when the attack became public, but it doesn't sound like this is going to be a major issue for now. So, sorry to end on a downer, but it sounds like it's going to be okay. We'll see you next Thursday as well. I'm Dom Catronio. Keep on swinging.